Triple M Network. Welcome to the Night Shift with Luke Boner.
Jess, how are you? It's Friday. How are you feeling today? You all right? You pumped?
I am good. How are you, Lukey?
Did you sleep today?
I did. I had a bit of a snooze.
Now, how's your mum's broken foot?
Oh, you know, still broken.
Yeah. A bit like your heart.
No, my heart's good.
Your heart's good. That's
my
right.
My heart's good.
Your heart's good at the moment. I'll talk to you later on, okay? 133353 is the telephone number. Let's talk. Let's have a conversation. G'day, Wayne.
How are you?
Mate, I'm good, Wayne. It's Friday. What do you reckon?
Oh, yeah, I'm feeling it. I'm feeling Friday already, mate. Yeah. I've only got about 6 hours to go, and I'm feeling Friday well and truly.
You and me, 6 hours, both of us, mate. We'll do it together.
Yeah, I'll be finished by about the time you go off air too, hopefully. So we'll see how we go.
We'll do it together.
All right, mate. Hey, listen, this thing about this liver with Hinchy.
Yeah.
I honestly think it's wrong. Anyone that does get a liver transplant shouldn't be back on the drink. Now, I was saying to Jess while I was on hold, my father, and it goes back to, I think it was 1980, Bob Hawke came into power.
Mm-hmm.
My father never touched a drink in his life, and then he became an alcoholic.
Because of Bob Hawke?
Oh, well, because Labor won. He was a Labor man through and through. He started drinking, and you know what I mean? Like, he started drinking, and then it became an alcoholic. Mate, we used to go to AA meetings and all with him.
Really? Your dad didn't drink until Labor came to power?
Yep. And then once they got power in, I think it was about 1980, I think I was in about second form.
It was a bit after that. Let me think.
Around the 80s it would have been.
82. Jess, can you just have a quick look for me? When did Bob Hawke win the election? He took over... He quit as leader of the ACTU and became a member of parliament. And as soon as that happened, everyone knew that the writing was on the wall for Bill Hayden. And then, Jess, can you just have a quick look for me? When did Bob Hawke win the election? I think it was 82.
I left school
83.
Oh, okay. Well, he must have started drinking before that, but that's when he became really heavily drinking.
Yeah.
And,
ironically, when Bob Hawke became Prime Minister, he swore he'd go off the grog.
Yeah, well, it didn't help my father, because my father's name was Bob Hoot, Bob too. But anyhow, my dad's initials were the same as Bob Hawke, so I don't know if that had anything to do with it. But anyhow, so he drank heavily. Now, he gave up the drink. He was told to give it up. He got sclerosis of the liver. On many occasions, they gave him a tablet to get him off the drink. He got off it. 12 years dry he was.
Yeah.
Until the day he found out he had cancer in the liver.
Oh, no.
Now, I lost my father 23 years ago. By the time they found it was way too late to do anything. Like, they couldn't cut it out. They couldn't do anything. So these people are getting liver transplants and then drinking. They don't deserve to have the new liver. My father never had that chance, and yet he was dry for 12 years.
Look, morally, you're probably right. I don't know. I'm no angel, so I'm just saying.
Hello.
Imagine if you had a son who passed away and donated his organs, and the person who got his liver continued to drink.
Oh, you're still upset.
Mm.
You'd have to. It's the same as I say to Jess. It's the same as people. I mean, you don't hear of it, but people who get lung transplants and then go back smoking.
Yeah.
Like, you've been given a new lease of life. How about giving that new lease of life a chance? Like, no, don't go and do it. I mean, I smoke, but, hey, that's beside the point. But these are my lungs. They're not somebody else's.
Yeah.
That's why I just thought I'd give you a tingle and just put that across. But the other quick thing I've got for you, last week when I rang in and I told you about the young bloke being bullied at school.
Tell me again. Sorry, I get a lot of these stories. I'm sorry, Wayne.
My 12-year-old was getting harassed by the kid at school, letting his tyres down, and was put on notice that the next time it happened, he'd get suspended. Yet the young bloke wasn't involved. The kid walked across the playground and smacked him across the face.
Yeah.
For talking to his girlfriend.
Yeah, that's right.
I finally got onto the school the next day, and the principal didn't want to talk to me until I told him if something wasn't done about it, I was going to the Department of Education.
Mm.
It has now all been rectified. And if any other incidents happen between the two of them, they dragged my young bloke out of class and three of his mates to get their side of the story. And if anything happens in the future, the young bloke's just to go to see his year advisor. And if he doesn't retaliate, the other kid will be suspended for a week, not 2 days.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they reckoned it was... because the other kid instigated it, he would have got 3 days. My young bloke, because he retaliated, was going to get a day. Well, why? He retaliated because some kids come up and punched him. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, back in my... They should bring the cane back, Luke. You'd remember that like I would, wouldn't you?
Oh, God, do I?
Oh, mate, I copped it many times for fighting. Didn't hurt me any. Didn't make me stop fighting at school either. But anyhow, that's beside the point.
Well, hang on. You've just said bring the cane back, and then you said it didn't have any effect on you.
Well, it didn't. It didn't hurt. Well, it hurt.
Of course it hurt. I mean, bloody hurt.
But, I mean, we still... It sort of did pull us into line for a while, and then you get into a scuff in the school grounds yourself, and then you'd be back in the office copping another lot. And it'd sort of be like a six-month thing, but it didn't do us any harm. And it didn't, like, people say, oh, but it hurts their ego and this, that, and the other, all the goodies. That's what half the problem is these days. Kids have got no discipline. That's the problem.
Well, we often talk about that. It's because we have changed our attitude. We've gone soft because kids are precious little things that, you know, and I don't know, it's the new wave of parenting, isn't it? Maybe the old way was a bit tough. I don't know.
Oh, the old way. Well, I'm 50 and I've still got respect for my elders, regardless if they're 55 or 60. Like, yeah. Kids don't have that these days. And it's like I've said to, my wife, she's got one child, my stepson, and he gets everything and anything he wants from his other, from his father, and his mother gives in to him. I said, how about some tough love every now and again?
Mm.
She goes, oh, but he never had it when he was a child. Well, that doesn't matter. He's 15. Give him some tough loving now. I don't mean smack him. Just don't give in to him.
Let's ask the question, Wayne, because you're with me for the next 6 hours. Let's see what happens.
Yep.
133353, what sort of tough love did you have growing up? Hang on. I'll ask the question. What sort of tough love did you have growing up? And did it do you any good, or did you grow up resenting your parents because you thought they were too tough?
All right. You know where the old barber strap that they used to sharpen razor blades on?
Yes.
Yeah, I used to cop that off my father only when we were really, really bad.
See, is that wrong? Is hitting someone with a strap like that, is that abuse?
No, it pulled me into line. I never misbehaved for the rest of my life.
Well, how many times?
Now Dad passed away and my mother's still alive. I still love them both to death. It didn't do me any harm.
All right, I'm asking the question. Did you cop tough love like Wayne here when you were growing up? And did it do you good, or do you hate your parents for it to this day? Let's find out. Let's do a poll.
Let's find out, Lukey. You have a great weekend. Just have a great weekend.
Wayne, I love talking to you, mate.
I told you I'm during the week next week.
We'll get you around to the man cave for a game of pool one day. We'll have to have an opening.
No, you'll have to, yeah.
Yeah.
You'd have to watch what truckies you invite, though, mate.
Yeah, I know. I know. Or instead of giving my beer away, I start selling it.
Oh, that, yeah, as long as it's cheap enough.
Yeah.
Like, you've only got to make 50 cents profit per can so you can buy the next lot of carton, that's all.
That's all you need.
Yeah, that's all. If you buy a carton, just $1.50 a can or something, just enough to cover costs.
Hey, did you hear that guy that rang yesterday? I'll find his name out in a minute. He's an ex-brewer with Carlton United. He was telling us he's actually...
Oh, about the Fosters?
He's confirmed that Fosters and Crown are exactly the same beer, just the way that it's packaged makes it taste different.
Heard that. I'm drinking Fosters from now on. I ain't drinking Crownies.
Who's going to buy Crownies from now on?
Right, but that's the same as... And you were talking about... something else came up about water. Mm. I don't know if it was last night.
No.
I used to work for a company and we used to cart for Coca-Cola.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is how stupid it is. I used to take 1 litre bottles of water out of Sydney.
Yeah.
This is in 1 week I'd done this. I took a mixed load, but it had 1 litre bottles of water. I used to take it. I took that to Queensland.
Yeah.
I then proceeded to pick up a full load, B-double load, to go to Melbourne. It had 500 mil bottles of water on it.
Yeah.
Same brand. I took that all the way to Melbourne, and then in Melbourne, I picked up a full load of Mother, plus, you know, the little poppers that they get on the airplanes for the kids?
Yes.
That was the same bloody water. So this, what is it? Well, it's a name brand.
Don't worry.
Yeah, but the brand, but it was all the same brand. And yet the water out of Sydney was supposed to be the same water that came out of Melbourne and Brisbane. Like, hello. They don't cart it down there by truck to bottle it.
Oh, how funny is that?
But yeah, they just cracked me up. We're just moving storage, basically. I went from a litre all the way down to, what are they, 200 mil bottles of water. And it was the same brand.
used to cart a truckload up to Queensland. Then they'd fill it up with the same water and you'd bring it back to Melbourne.
Different size, and I took it to Melbourne. Then I filled up a truckload of mother and smaller bottles of water, same brand, and took it all the way back to Brisbane.
Oh, God.
Why wouldn't you just... Yeah, I don't know. But that's the way they do it.
Hey,
they make
listen, don't complain, Wayne. You were getting paid.
I was getting paid well for it, but it just cracked me up.
Yeah, it's good.
And the other thing is, there's two bottles of water that come out of Sydney, two different brands, bottled in the same factory.
There you are.
Bottled
water is the biggest scam in the world. Drink out of a bloody tap like we did.
Yeah, or drink out of a hose.
Drink out of a hose, mate.
Hey, you can't do that nowadays. Kids will get germs. You know, and that's the whole problem why kids get sick.
Yeah, because they've been
too wrapped up in everything else, and they're not allowed to get sick to get their immune system used to that. Whatever.
I couldn't agree with you more. Wayne, next time you see one of these commercials, you take note. There are a lot of commercials on TV for antibacterial wipes or antibacterial sprays that you use to wipe down the kitchen bench in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And they always show a little toddler crawling on his hands and knees across the floor and the mother looking down with great relief because she has killed all the germs with her whiz-bang antibacterial, anti-germ kitchen wipes.
She wishes she just did.
And these products and the advertising agencies, they prey on these phobias. It's been proven that a lot of young mums are so concerned about the health of their children, they get germ phobias and they become obsessed with it. Well, the thing is, kids need germs.
That's right, to fight the germs in future or whatever else.
That's right. That's why you got these staph infections in hospitals, because they have been sterilising and sterilising and sterilising, and the bacteria that's now growing is immune to it all.
Yeah. My 21-year-old son, I caught him one day eating dog food out of a bloody, like the dry dog food and all that. Never hurt him. He stands 6'3" now and he's about 110 kilos.
I agree with you. You need germs to build your immune system. And if you're constantly being wrapped in cotton wool and desensitised and sanitised and antibacterialised, if that's a word, you've got no chance of building that immune system.
I'll give you one quick thing to think about, and I think it was on the show a couple of weeks ago. You know those hand dryers in the restrooms and that now?
Yeah, the blow dryers. Apparently they're no good for you.
Yeah, because they create bacteria. I won't use them. An old bloke that I used to work with used to wash his hands at a rest area like Macca's or somewhere like that, and he always carried his handkerchief in his hands, and I could never work out why, like in his pocket, never used it to blow his nose. He used to use that to open the doors, because the amount of people, you stand there one day and watch, the amount of people that go to the toilet, males, do what they do, and then walk out without washing their hands, yet they touch that door handle to get out.
I know.
And that's why now a lot of restrooms now have, you know, like in the shopping centres, they have that where you walk in, then turn behind the brick, so there's no doors.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I've noticed that too, Wayne. Wayne, we're very light-minded. You take care.
You too, mate. You have a great weekend. Talk to you next week.
Look forward to it, mate. Take care of that. Take care of that boy of yours. 133353. So there you go. There's a conversation starter. How good's Wayne? Give us a call and let us know what your thoughts are and all of that. This is the Night Shift on Triple M. Have you ever met your hero? I was watching a replay of Mick Fanning getting knocked out at the Snapper Rocks event yesterday. And he's got, I think, one more. I think it's Bell's Beach is coming up. But as he's coming out of the water, a young fan comes up hoping for an autograph. Well, the fan got more than an autograph. Mick gave him his surfboard. He said, have this. Cop this. Wow. Just fantastic. I mean, could you love Mick Fanning anymore? And that's going to make that kid's day. I hope he doesn't use the surfboard. I hope it goes up on a wall. No, actually, you know what? Mick would want him to ride it, wouldn't he? Anyway, it just got me thinking, have you ever met your hero? I'll tell you a story about me meeting my hero, Graham Kennedy, a little bit later on. Didn't quite go to plan. Well, I'll tell the story later. But what's your story? 133353 is the telephone number. Wayne was on the phone a little bit earlier on. God, did he give us some topics to talk about. But he was talking about his son who's being bullied at school, and they're trying to sort it out. His son got into trouble because this kid had been continually bullying him. The kid punches Wayne's son, and Wayne retaliated and punched him back, and he got into trouble as well. But Wayne was talking about the way he raises his boy, a bit like the way his dad raised him. He said they should bring back the cane. Wayne was telling us that his dad used to give him the strap, but he loved his dad anyway, didn't resent him for the tough love that he used whilst raising him. Did you get raised by tough love? Did you get smacked? Did you get caned? Did you get hit? Do you resent your parents for that now? Or do you think they did the right thing? 133353 is the telephone number. We're going to talk a little bit later on about homelessness with the Reverend Jim. Apparently there are grave fears that homelessness in northern New South Wales will increase because of the Commonwealth Games. And they start just next month. I remember living in Sydney in 2000 when the Olympics came to town. And of course, Sydney, unfortunately, has many, many homeless people. It's a big city. But they disappeared during the Games. And where they went, I have no idea. People still talk about it. Where'd the homeless go? They got rid of them. I don't know if they put them all on buses and shipped them out west. I have no idea. But they disappeared for the 2 weeks of the Olympics because they made the city look a little bit untidy, you see. Anyway, we'll talk about that a little bit later on. 133353. And is it discrimination to advertise a job for a non-smoker? You are not allowed to advertise sex. You are not allowed to advertise, mind you, the government does. The government does when it comes to the ADF or any other departmental position that becomes available where they want quotas. No, the government does, but not private enterprise. You can't advertise for male or female, religion, height. But apparently you can advertise for a non-smoker. Is that discriminatory? Does that stand up with the Anti-Discrimination Act? Well, apparently it does. Employment expert Graeme Wynne will join us on that shortly. 133353 is the telephone number. Plenty of other things I want to talk about as well. Mick, g'day.
G'day. How are you, mate?
Good on you, Mick. Thanks, mate.
No worries. Albany, Western Australia, mate. I'd just like to talk about your meeting your personal hero.
Have you met a hero?
Absolutely. I had full thickness burns on my lower legs and ankles.
I think you're talking a bit close to the phone. It's a bit muffled. Can you just sort of?
Yeah, sorry, mate.
I think that's a little bit better. You had what burns?
Full thickness burns on my full thickness, which is where the skin is dead, on my lower legs and ankles. After a mishap with a deep fryer, and
What happened? What went on?
Well, it's not that exciting, to be honest. I was showing my young kids how to we made fish and chips in the old days with the deep fryer.
Yeah,
and I cooked them a feed, and I took it outside to tip the oil out, and the handle broke, and it went over my lower legs and ankles.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I was standing near some leaf litter, and it ignited, and it burnt me quite badly.
Oh, no.
I had to go to hospital. I went to Fiona Stanley Hospital in Perth, Western Australia.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I was attended to by Fiona Wood and her wonderful staff at the burns unit.
Oh, Dr. Fiona Wood, yes. She's world famous. And she was very, very instrumental in helping those people in the Bali bombings. Remember that?
Absolutely. I do. And I knew it so well. And I met her, and she came in to me 2 days, probably a day after I was there, and said, "Well, I'll be operating on you, blah blah blah." And I said, "You are joking, aren't you?" And she said, "No." And I said, "You will be operating on me. I said, I can't believe it. I said, how can somebody like me, a blue-collar worker, you know, who's made a stupid mistake, get somebody like you operating on her, on me? And she said, no, we're here to look after you. You'll be fine. That's okay. And she was a very brilliant and humble person, and she had such a dedicated staff. There was a team of people there, probably 15 people, and she is such an amazing person, but such a normal person as well.
Dr. Fiona Wood.
Yeah, she operated on me, and I am completely healed. She's followed me up with something she's instigated as well, because I'm 450 kilometres from Perth.
Yeah.
And she instigated a thing called telehealth, where I don't have to drive 450 kilometres to Perth and have a 10-minute consultation. I can actually go to my local hospital.
Yeah.
And sit in front of a big TV screen, and we can talk about how things are going. And she can say, yeah, everything's fine, that's all right, you know.
And she developed this?
She did. And she said to me, she said, look, I need your help. And I said, well, you know, who do you want me to kill? I said, I'll do anything for you. And she said, would you extol the virtues of telehealth? And I said, absolutely. So we did a media interview and everything. I'm sorry to drag it on, but I just want to...
No, this is fascinating. This is fascinating.
She's so dedicated to helping her patients. And she said, would you help me? And I said, of course I would. I'd do anything for you. And she said, right, we'll go on to a media interview, you know, and I need you to explain to the media how far you are actually from Perth and how much telehealth helps you. And I said, I can't drive. I said, I've been burnt on the lower leg. I said, I'm in recovery. I said, I cannot hop into a car and drive 450 kilometres an hour, wait 10 minutes and then drive home. I said, it's not possible. I said, and that's something you've told me. I said, but everything you're setting up for all the burns patients, I said, is it's so instrumental in giving everybody a normal life and letting them get more recovery time rather than spending time on the road for no reason. So,
that is just an outstanding story, Mick. Thank you so much. Tell me this.
Yes.
Am I right in thinking that Dr. Fiona Wood developed that spray-on skin, which was an alternative to grafting?
Mate, she did it to me, and she came into the room and she explained it to me, and she said, "Well, we're going to have to shave some skin off your thigh.
Yeah,
and we're going to have to put it into a mixer and extract all the things we don't need, and keep all the things we do, and we're going to do a reseeding." She said, "Have you ever reseeded a lawn?" And I said, "Yeah, I have done it about 20 times." I said, "Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm a fastidious lawn addict."
Yeah.
She said, "Well, this is how it works." And she was just so fantastic. She explained it in such basic terms. And she's actually developed all that technology, which, to be honest, is... when she explains it to you, it's so basic that you think, well, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, she is an amazing woman, and she helped all those people after the Bali bombings, and she developed this spray-on skin. She developed it with another scientist, Marie Stoner.
That's right. And she just said, well, she goes, it's so basic. The principle of it, she explains it to you as a patient, because, you know, you're a bit nervous about what's going on. And she explains it to you, and it's so easy. And I'll tell you what, I've got it on my leg, and it's amazing.
How's your leg?
And it's so simple.
How is your leg now?
Really good, actually. She keeps in contact regular.
Wow.
Goes to the local hospital to have the telehealth. She's always interested, and I can't believe it. I go up there sort of like once a month, and she actually takes time out of her day to come in to talk to me face to face and see how I'm going. And I'm flabbergasted. I said to her, you are a huge personal hero of mine. I said, you know, and every other Australian, what you've done. I said, you're an amazing person. And she gets a bit red in the face because she's very humble.
Can you do me a huge favour? Next time you talk to her, tell her that you spoke on national radio about her.
I will.
And tell her I'd love to have a chat with her on the radio.
She's an amazing person. You should look her up and have a chat with her, mate. She's a very shy person, very, very sort of, you know, she tries to keep to herself. She's very humble, but she's such an amazing individual, mate. It's unbelievable.
Well, that's a great story. That is a great story. Mick, what a yarn. Mick from Albany in WA. Thank you.
Albany.
Albany.
Yeah. Not Albany, buddy. It's Albany.
Good boy. Albany. I'll remember that. Thank you so much, Mick.
You're welcome. See you, mate.
Thank you. Gee whiz, eh? The people you meet in the middle of the night on the radio.
This is the Night Shift.
Good morning, Australia. Jeff, g'day.
Hey.
How are you, Jeff?
Very good. And yourself?
Yeah, good, mate.
I am just calling something that you were talking about earlier about basically hitting kids.
Yeah, disciplining kids with, you know, there's an old saying, spare the rod. What is it? Spoil the kids, spare the rod. Did your parents hit you?
No. Well, actually, yeah, early on, a couple times I had a chair thrown at me and, you know, various things, but out of anger.
Mm-hmm.
And I've basically looked at this issue from all different angles because I'm a parent. I'm also a teacher. And I've also done a fair bit of research on how to get kids to, you know, be self-disciplined. And basically, there's a whole concept that's called unconditional parenting. And it's about moving beyond rewards and punishments and teaching kids about intrinsic motivation so that you don't have to force them to do stuff. We shouldn't be in a situation where, you know, basically that kids are only loved and accepted when they please or impress us. They should be unconditionally loved and accepted for who they are. That doesn't mean their behavior necessarily is okay, but there's a difference between disciplining a child and using violence. Because no matter what, if you lay a hand on a child or anybody else for that matter, that is violence. And you're teaching that child that violence is okay, you know, in that circumstance to get your way. And the only time I would actually use violence is if a kid was about to run out into the road, if it was a, you know, dangerous situation, I might grab them, you know, something to save their life. But other than that, there's essentially no reason to use violence. And parents that do that are mostly acting out of anger or embarrassment.
I remember getting a couple of beatings from my dad, who was by nature a pretty gentle bloke, but the beatings he gave me, one in particular, it was definitely out of anger.
Yeah.
And embarrassment.
Yeah, what is it? It's all about control, and we should be asking ourselves, what do our kids really need? And it doesn't mean you have to spoil them. Again, I want to emphasize that we shouldn't reward them all the time for doing the right thing either. They should be intrinsically motivated, like all human beings should be intrinsically motivated to do the right thing, even when nobody's looking.
Now, you said that you're a teacher. How long have you been a teacher for?
Oh, 15 years or so.
15 years. Because there are schools in Australia that reward kids for not achieving. They get a trophy for participating.
Yeah.
And in the real world, you don't get a trophy for participating. You get a trophy if you excel. You get a pay rise and a promotion, and you get to keep your job if you're good at it and if you perform. And, for example, in this industry that Jess and I are working in, it is unbelievably competitive. And if we don't perform, we're gone. We don't get trophies for coming second or third.
Yeah, no, they shouldn't be getting trophies. But the whole thing is people shouldn't be punished for necessarily doing, like, you know, physically punished for doing something wrong. By the same token, they shouldn't be rewarded just for doing what they should be doing anyway.
Yeah.
You know, obviously you want to, you know, give positive feedback and so forth to people, whether your kids or your employees or whatever. but you know, it should come from within. It shouldn't be like, you know, because otherwise people only learn to do the right thing when I'm going to get a reward.
Can I ask you, are you high school or primary school?
I've done both.
Okay. Have you ever had a student that's been such a little prick that you've thought to yourself, Jeff, geez, I wish I could take a stick to you?
Well, let's put it this way. My first teaching job in America, I whipped a clipboard and nearly decapitated one of my students.
There you are.
Didn't hit him. And then I smashed the desk so hard on the floor that it basically broke. And then one of the kids reported me to the principal, and I ended up leaving that job after a year. But that was mainly my frustration with the administration there, because the other teachers didn't do anything creative with the kids. So the kids, when they come to my class, I would try to do creative things and, you know, basically let them, give them a bit more freedom. But because they didn't have that opportunity in other classes, they would act out in my class.
Yeah. Do you teach a specific subject?
Social studies. So civics, behavior, psychology.
Okay. I'm going to change the subject. I've heard what you've said, and I've taken it in. And you said that you taught in America. You're born and bred in America?
Yes.
Yeah, and you know their education system pretty well then.
Yeah.
Guns in schools. I've got to ask you this. You know, 17 people dead in Florida. And I've got a funny feeling, Jeff, that there is a wave of change with the younger generation coming through looking at these protests that we see. But I think it's going to be generational. I don't think that the attitude towards guns in the United States is going to happen quickly. I think it will be generational. But can I ask you this? President Trump has said the way to keep schools safe is to arm the teachers and to introduce more guns. Your thoughts?
Well, as a teacher, you know, if somebody comes into a school with a gun, how are they going to know when the police come to, you know, deal with it? How are they going to know who the teachers are? Let's say the gunman dresses up like a teacher, and then, you know, creates mass confusion. It's, you know, it's insane. The whole thing, you know, the NRA is pulling the strings in the U.S., and it's basically because there's billions of dollars in weapons manufacturing and sales. It's to create fear, and it's their philosophy is guns everywhere for everyone. And, you know, it's basically creating a lot of divisiveness.
When you were teaching in the United States, did you feel safe?
No. And in fact, I have a 12-year-old in Australia, and I'm glad he's not going to school in the U.S. because you shouldn't have to worry about your safety in a school. There are, you know, there's places where you can carry loaded weapons on college campuses, churches, malls. And, you know, that's just, I mean, it's like the Wild West.
It's like, like the Wild West. Is that what you just said?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's like Westworld. I don't know if you've ever seen the show Westworld, but it is. And they're trying, you know, the people that are pushing the guns, part of it is creating more fear and divisiveness. And I think it's intentional. I think that, you know, the government right now under Trump is allowing this stuff to happen, because if you keep people perpetually scared and, you know, and basically pointing their fingers at each other, they're not actually going to pay attention to some of the stuff that's really going on and the real violence that, you know, for instance, all the wars that the U.S. is in and all this other stuff. You know, it's like a war in your streets and in your schools. And it's just, you know, people are dying, you know, and it amazes me, because we have terrorist things happen and, you know, all kinds of stuff happens, you know, and if there's a shooting by a white person in the U.S., that's not considered terrorism, you know?
Ah, exactly. I said that. And this bloke who is now facing trial, and I believe plea bargaining is still going on because they're trying to avoid the death penalty. But had this bloke, if his name was Muhammad, it would have been called an act of terrorism. But because it's not, it's now a mental health issue. Is it really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, And, you know, the whole thing about you can blame mental health on stuff, but why are so many kids mentally unhealthy? You know, it's part of it's the system, you know, part of it's the schools.
Oh, yes, but the authorities knew about this bloke, the teachers, his fellow students, they all knew. They all knew that this guy was completely unhinged, and they knew that he had guns, and they allowed him to buy guns right up until the day of that shooting. Listen, Jeff, I've got to leave it there. I've got a billion people who've been waiting on, but it's been great talking to you. And why are you up? Tell me you're marking books.
I am actually preparing a lesson for tomorrow.
There you are. All right. Well, you take care of yourself and take care of that cough, all right?
You too. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Cheers.
Bye-bye. 133353. Ernie on the Gold Coast. G'day.
Oh, how are you, mate?
I'm good, Ernie. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. Sorry, I'm just working at the moment, but I wanted to talk to you about the violence of children while hitting them.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that violence isn't good, but verbal abuse is even worse because my father, growing up, he used to always tell me, you know, you're not going to amount to much and all this sort of stuff.
Mm.
And I believe words actually hurt more. Like, I don't think a hit every now and then would hurt if it's in the right context.
Mm.
But when it comes to verbal abuse, I think that is quite more damaging. And you never forget that.
Words can be really damaging.
That's one sort of thing I just wanted to touch on. And a few days ago, you were talking about what would you do if you were Prime Minister for one day?
Yeah, what would you do?
My biggest concern... I'm not discerning people that don't work, but what I would do if I was, every year a compulsory examination on people who are on the dole as a fitness test.
Mm-hmm.
No, a fitness test for the people who obviously that can't work, that's fair enough, but there are people out there that should be able to work. And if that doesn't work.
Are you talking about the disability pension?
Pardon? Well, this is another story because my mother. We just had a restaurant last year and she had to shut it after 30 years because of her shoulder. So she's going through hell to try and get something for her pension, for her disability, because of all the other people, obviously, who do stooge the system. So,
yeah, but you see, a lot of people on the disability pension, it's not physical. They're claiming stress and they're claiming mental health issues, post-traumatic stress disorder and things like that. And that is very, very hard to disprove.
Yeah, I understand. Well, without, of course, you don't have any written evidence for that or any physical proof. But I believe that when it comes to the people on the dole, I think every year they should do a compulsory fitness test in order mentally and physically. And I believe the government should put in conscription, do like a year military to get these people rehabilitated.
Yeah, we've talked about that too. Conscription for those people who are... on the dole,
yeah.
Forcing them to work for the dole. All right, good on you, Ernie. Thank you for that. Well,
no worries. Take care.
Thank you. You take care too, Ernie. Thanks for your call. Bye-bye. Oh, it was a noisy phone. Craig, good day.
How we going, bud?
Yeah, good, Craig. Where are you?
Mate, I'm actually just driving back through to Bathurst at the moment.
Okay, are you in a truck?
No, just in the work here.
Okay, it's a very noisy phone. What did you want to say?
Oh, just about with discipline, like, and that sort of thing. I just think that it's funny, you know. I went to school in Bathurst, and basically I've worked around the world and all around the country. Like, and the funny thing is, I remember vividly when I was in year seven, and when I finally made it into the big school, like a little fish in the big pond.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember seeing one of the kids who was a cheeky little shit, having a crack at the seniors, and they just pretty much pick him up, had him dangling by the ankles from like the upper balcony or the upper level. Down in the tech block, and I just thought to myself, shit, I don't want to be one of those kids.
Yeah.
I'll make sure I stay away from the white shirts. And I remembered, like, you know, that when it changed around, like, and I'd become a senior.
Yeah.
That was around about 1990. That it became the fact that, like, with the seniors, like, they had to sort of take the responsibility for not bullying the younger kids, and they had to accept the cheek of them. Running into the seniors' common room and that sort of thing, and pretty much the seniors were the ones that were held to account and put on detention and basically reprimanded for their actions, like, you know, rather than these juniors antagonising and basically being out of line.
That's interesting. You and I don't know each other, and you haven't passed this information on to Jess, But can I ask you, the school that you went to, was it a Catholic school?
No, no, it was Bathurst High. And funny enough, you, actually, you and I do know each other because we used to play basketball against each other for years in Bathurst.
Did we?
Yeah.
Okay. The reason I said it was the Catholic school, I thought you may have gone to Stanley's, and the reason I thought that was because the bullying that I witnessed at my boarding school, which was a branch of the what were they called? SHC Sacred Heart schools, Chevalier. The bullying there was systemic, mate, and it was encouraged. And the seniors ran the school, and the priests let them, because for exactly the same reason that you avoided the seniors when you were in year 7 and year 8. So, it's funny.
You know, it's funny when you talk about discipline. My dad never used to drink, working that sort of thing. He's a very pleasant man. Used to be a rugby, like, you know, first grade rugby ref, even down in Sydney. And we got moved from Maroubra out to Bathurst, actually, with the CMA. And, you know, I remember one day we were sort of pestering Dad about giving up the ciggies and saying, Dad, look, you know, you need to cut back or you need to cut down on the milligrams, da-da-da-da. And one day we managed to muster enough money to then go and get someone to go and buy a pack of Winnie White Reds instead of a pack of Winnie Reds that he was smoking. And one day we snuck the smokes out and then changed over the smokes from one pack to the other.
Yeah.
And we sort of sat back and watched and watched him smoke them. And he just said, "See, Dad, like, you know, you could just change the sort of half the strength and you wouldn't know." And next thing you know, we got flogged with an inch of our lives for touching his smokes and basically tampering with his smokes. But he used to keep a piece of lay flat hose on the lounge right next to where he used to sit.
Oh, dear. Were you scared of your dad? When you look back now, do you respect him? Do you think he did the right thing by being so tough?
I'll tell you what he did. Like, and it was one of those things that I did respect him, and I always have. And but then again, it was one of those things that we knew where our place was, and we knew how to attribute ourselves to every situation, because, like, you know, if it wasn't. He wasn't the most encouraging dad and that sort of thing. Like, he's quite quiet. And the funny thing is, I didn't know about half his attributes, like, and that sort of thing until he actually died. I didn't even realise, it was only at his funeral that I found out that he was actually one of the instigators of Carefly with Ian Badham.
Really?
Yeah. Like, and I was sitting there shocked at his funeral service when I was 20. Just sort of going, Jesus, I didn't know half of this stuff about my dad. Looking with him with the Royal Life Saving, like down around Coogee and Maroubra and that sort of thing. So it was quite sad in a way. But, with discipline, like, I don't know, it didn't really affect the way that we thought about him in any way, shape or form.
Yeah, that's very interesting. All right, I'll let you keep driving, Craig. So we used to play basketball against each other, did we?
Yes, we did. We did back in men's A grade, back in Bathurst.
I would have been towards the end of my career, I think, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, like, you had the old head pump fake going a fair bit. It was all happening.
Did I win more than I lost?
Oh, I think it was one of those things. I think your tolerance level for dickheads was pretty much up there. Like, and you were pretty brutal on the court. So, like, it was one of those things. Like, I know there was a bit of rough and tumble in the Bathurst comp and that sort of thing. It got a little bit physical sometimes, but it was good.
Yeah, all right, good.
One other quick thing. I'll tell you what, you hear moaning about the trains and half the seats being backwards.
Yes, I saw that yesterday, yes.
I've done it. Like, I specialise in all the infrastructure projects, being rail, road tunnels, all that sort of stuff. And it's funny, like, the biggest thing that they'll probably really worry about at the moment would be the fact that these trains that were built overseas, that don't worry about the Newcastle line and having the 3-hour run at Newcastle running backwards for half the train. The fact is that now they've built those trains and they're actually 200 mil too wide.
They're too wide.
To get through the tunnels up through the Blue Mountains. And so now they've just gone, oh, don't worry about it, we'll just widen the tunnels.
We'll widen the tunnels for those living around Australia, because this is a national program, Craig, so I try not to be too parochial. But the New South Wales government spent how many billion dollars on these new trains?
Well, I can't remember the figure, but the thing is, the figure to actually widen the tunnels through the Blue Mountains would be astronomical.
So anyway, they bought these new trains. Jess, can you see if you can find out how much they spent? Are you with me, Jess? Can you hear me? Can you find out how much the government spent on these new trains that are too wide? Anyway, they're 200 mils too wide. So they're stuck with these trains. So they've said, okay, we'll widen the tunnels.
It's hilarious.
It is hilarious. It is a joke. All right, Craig, good to hear your voice, and call back anytime.
Take it easy, mate.
You too. This is a New South Wales story, but it's too good to...
It's pretty bad.
It's too good to let slip, and Craig alluded to it just a second ago. You know, there's an old saying, you've only got one job to do.
This guy had one job.
Could have been a girl. Don't discriminate.
I was just about to say that.
Do you want to know something, actually?
Go on.
The current Premier of New South Wales, Gladys Berejiklian, was the Minister for Transport when this was signed off on.
But maybe she didn't have the final say.
Maybe she didn't have a...
There was someone.
Maybe she didn't have a tape measure.
Maybe she ran out.
The New South Wales government has an embarrassing problem with $2 billion...
Not a lot.
$2 billion worth of new trains, and the order's been done, it's signed off, the check's been sent.
Yeah.
There's a problem.
Go on.
The trains are 20 centimetres too wide to fit through a number of tunnels.
One job.
Yeah, one job to
one
do.
One job. So how are they going to fix it, Loki? Tell the people.
It means that the new trains could collide with the tunnel walls on their way up to the world-famous Blue Mountains.
It's a minor issue.
But Transport New South Wales, the government body that manages the state's rail system, has come up with a cunning plan. It has proposed simply relaxing current safety standards. So at the moment, trains have to be so far from the wall of a tunnel or a platform. So, and those safety standards would have been put in place for a reason, but they're going to say, it doesn't matter now.
No worries.
And that will allow partially some of these trains to run. We're talking about 10 tunnels that were built in the 1900s. So what they're going to do is they're going to widen the tunnels.
Perfect.
Beautiful.
Genius.
This is a true story. It's a true story. State opposition leader Luke Foley said the government needs to show how they will guarantee passenger safety when the new trains are introduced from next year. It takes a special type of incompetence to buy trains that don't fit through the tunnels, Mr. Foley said. Mr. Foley, well done. Welcome to Mastermind. Special subject, the bleeding obvious, in the words of Basil Fawlty.
That's bad.
It's not good.
It's really not okay.
Regional train services around Sydney, branded as intercity, are operated by a mixture of trains. The oldest of these, called V-sets, date from the 70s and 80s and operate on the Blue Mountains line. Along with XPT longer distance trains, V-sets are narrower than the modern rolling stock and are the only ones allowed through the 10 tunnels that we're talking about. So, how much did we spend on these trains?
$2 billion.
Yay. And what's wrong with them?
They don't fit.
It's not funny.
It's not at all.
133353, The Night Shift.
On Triple M.
On the email, I think it was an email.
It was an email.
An email came through yesterday, and it's a dilemma. Jess, take it away.
Yeah, from a female listener, and we're going to keep her anonymous. Hey, Luke and Jess, love the show. Been trying to fall pregnant for years now. I can't fall pregnant naturally. My partner and I have chosen IVF. This might make me sound horrible. I desperately want a boy. So does my partner, and I fear I'll be disappointed if it's a girl. In Australia, gender selection is not legal, which is the use of IVF to get the baby of your desired sex. I'm considering going overseas where it is legal in order to choose to have a boy. I think Australia should legalize gender selection in IVF to prevent parents from feeling disappointed when they don't have the gender they want.
Ooh, I remember on Late Line on the ABC last year, they did an interview with a lady whose name was, it wasn't her real name, Kate.
Mm.
And they interviewed her. They blackened her out and did her in silhouette. She was that upset. She was suffering what they called gender disappointment. And there were a number of women who agreed to be interviewed, but Kate suffered from gender disappointment. How seriously you take that concept probably goes a long way to determining how you feel about whether Australia should legalise gender selection, that is, the use of IVF to get the baby of your desired sex. Now, gender disappointment is not a medically recognised condition, but this Kate, 29 she was, already had two boys. She's 5 months pregnant with her third boy, and she said on Late Line she felt gutted.
Well, she's not the only one.
She said that she went to the bedroom and cried and cried and cried. Then her husband came in and he cried as well. They felt unbelievably disappointed and gutted that their third child wasn't going to be a boy. There are people out there in Triple M land who have miscarried or who cannot have children or have given birth to stillborn children who would have killed for a healthy anything.
Of course.
However, do we have the right to make those people feel guilty? I remember this Kate on Late Line, and she was sobbing and carrying on, and she felt guilty that she didn't want this child because it was a boy. They desperately wanted a girl.
Well, our emailer here says, might make me sound like a bad person, but I'm positive I'm not the only one. Maybe I'm just one of the few brave enough to admit it.
133353, can you go through IVF in other countries and choose the sex of your baby?
You can, and that's what this email's saying. She thinks she's going to go elsewhere because in Australia it's not legal. And she's asking us, should it be legal to use IVF in order to choose your gender?
What do you think, folks? Should Australia reverse its national ban on IVF gender selection? Should a couple be able to choose the sex of their child?
Yikes. But then, what happens if you say, all right, we've chosen a girl and you end up with a boy? What happens then? Can you sue?
Yes.
It's going to open up a whole can of worms.
Take it back, get a refund.
Luke.
Well, I'm saying if you're talking about a consumer item.
Well, that's
you?
What it becomes.
That's what it becomes.
I mean, we're really playing God here.
That's what I'm saying. Now, playing God. Don't we already play God?
With IVF.
With IVF.
But it does bring a blessing to many people who can't fall pregnant.
What do you think, folks? Aren't we already playing God? Give us a call and let us know what you think. This is The Night Shift.
On Triple M.
Yeah, did you see the footage of Mick Fanning handing his surfboard over to a young fan? It's on our Facebook page if you haven't seen it. It's just great. It's just a wonderful moment. I mean, can we love Mick Fanning any more than we already do? I mean, seriously, here he is. He's lost his event. He was eliminated in the fourth round of his second last ever event on the World Surf League Tour. It was the Snapper Rocks event. And he gets out of the water. He's fine. And a young fella, little grommet, a young boy comes up and is hoping for an autograph. Well, he does better than that. Mick Fanning gave him his surfboard, signed the surfboard and gave him the board. It doesn't get better than that. And he was applauded as he walked out of the water. That kid's going to remember that forever. And I'm just wondering, would you use the board or would you put it up on a wall somewhere? I think Mick would want you to use it. But it just made me think, have you ever met your hero? And how did it go? Did you finally meet someone that you've absolutely held in awe for many, many years and lucky enough one day you've met them? Did it go well or not so well, like my meeting with Graham Kennedy many years ago? I absolutely idolised the bloke. Finally met him when I was 16 working at an office boy at another Sydney radio station. And I said, hello, Mr. Kennedy, I love you, I'm blankety blanks. And I put my hand out to shake his hand. And he kept walking, didn't offer me his hand, and said to the bloke he was with, who was that little shit? But I'm not bitter about it. It was only in 1978. I'm over it. But have you ever met your hero, 133353. And should couples needing IVF be able to select the sex of their baby? We are already toying with nature, aren't we? Is it just the next step? I mean, we clone things now, don't we? We're mucking around with stem cells. But should a couple be able to choose the sex of their baby? It's a dilemma. And it was an email sent in to us by Anonymous. Kevin, g'day.
G'day, Luke. How are you going?
I'm good, Kevin. Welcome to Friday.
Thank you. Well, I just, on the IVF thing, as someone who's gone through the IVF program, there's a lot of heartache and a lot of stress involved with it, especially if you're unsuccessful like we were, and there was nothing wrong with either of us. I don't believe you should be able to choose the sex. I think you should be grateful for whatever comes along.
Okay, but let me just say this again. IVF is already toying with nature. If you desperately want a boy or a girl, why not?
Well, I think you should just...
Tell me the reason why you shouldn't. I agree with you. You should be grateful that you are finally able to have a baby. God, isn't it amazing, Kevin, how many people have children that don't want them?
And that's the annoying part about it. When you go through the IVF program, as I said, unsuccessfully, like we were, and you see these things around you all the time, it's so frustrating and annoying, and you just feel like picking a little kid up and giving them a cuddle or her a cuddle or whatever, you know, just it's heartbreaking, really.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You would feel it more than anyone. And when you hear about these, we've talked about it this week, young kids being abused, and should we or shouldn't we take them away from their families and keep them out of danger? And for someone who's desperate for a baby, eh?
Yeah, well, we were on the wrong end of the stick all the way down the line. You know, we weren't Australian citizens back then. We had a German Shepherd, which put us against the adoption thing. And every step of the way, we seemed to be just one out of
it. You couldn't adopt a child because you had a German Shepherd?
Correct.
Mate, I'd get rid of the German Shepherd.
Well, we haven't got them anymore now, but... That's we didn't know why we were getting refused at the time until it had come about, and we were told that one of the reasons was that we had a German Shepherd because it was on the dangerous dogs list and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, okay, you'd say that the adoption agency then, no worries, fixed, problem solved, German Shepherd gone.
Well, by the time we got that information, we were too late anyway because we were too old back then. We were just one step behind all the way down the track.
Yeah. So how did IVF go for you?
It didn't work for us.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's all right.
How much did it cost?
I can't remember the exact cost, Luke, to be honest, but it wasn't two bob's worth. It was a fair chunk of change.
Oh, it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money.
Yep. Not the money, though, Luke. It's the heartache, the disappointment of almost getting there and thinking, yeah, this is the time, and then it's you get the result and it fails again. It's like, not again, you know?
I hear what you're saying, Kevin. Are you an uncle?
Yes.
So is that almost as good?
It is when we see them. Unfortunately, all our family is over in England, so... we don't get to see them very regularly, but we're on the phone all the time. And my wife's just come back from there, actually, and had an absolute ball with the nieces and nephews that she met for the first time. So it's you get some sort of family worth, if you like.
Yeah, so family gratification, and now with Skype and all that, you can talk to them through a camera.
That's right, yeah, we do that regularly, yeah.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I'm sorry you couldn't have children, Kevin. I hear what you're saying.
No, that's fine.
Thanks for your call.
Thanks, Luke.
Okay, bye-bye. To the Gold Coast. G'day, Tyler.
Yeah, g'day.
Yeah, g'day.
Yeah, I was going to say I'm on the pro side for the IVF. I've got two stories. They're both pretty much identical.
Okay.
My dad used to work in childcare. He had a mother come in with... she desperately wanted a girl. She could have kids. But anyway, she's ended up with six boys and still trying for a girl.
Wow.
She can't even afford the six boys that she's got, but she's going to keep pushing for it. And the other side is...
Hang on, she can't afford to keep the kids she's got, but she's going to keep going until she gets a girl.
Yeah, she's going to keep going and keep...
Like, what's her limit?
She wants a girl.
Where's her limit?
Oh, I've got no idea. He was in the childcare industry and she just couldn't keep up with the payments for childcare and so forth, so she dropped out and did home care and so on.
And she's going to keep punching out kids until she gets a girl. Is that real?
Yep, and my cousin's in the same situation. They budgeted before they started having kids. They're like, at max, we can afford two kids, one boy, one girl, and six boys later, they're still trying. It's going to rip their family apart down the track at some point. But, jeez. Yeah, no.
Wow.
So if it got legalized and they could just pick and be done with it, that would be a problem solved. But yeah. I'm guessing there'd be quite a few women out there who want to have the, raise a mini-me kind of deal. A woman wants a girl, that kind of side, and a man wants a boy. But, yeah, no, they're just going to keep pumping out boys till they get a girl, one way or the other.
Wow. Just going to keep punching them out.
Yep. So, I don't know. It's interesting. It's interesting. But, that'd be a pro side of the argument. Be cut costs, be less stress on the family. And if they're going to have a girl one way or the other, then just give them the option to do it.
Or the other option is we've got six healthy children. That'll do.
Yes, I know. That's what my cousin's partners say. Hey, we budgeted for two. The two's all we can afford, but, you know, happy wife, happy life, that kind of approach at this point.
I don't get it. I'm just going off what you've told me. They can't afford the six they've got. They only budgeted for two. Kids are very expensive. Yep. And so they're prepared to put themselves through financial hardship and their family. Yep. Just to satisfy the need for a girl.
Yep. Have to have a girl. Have to.
Have to have a girl. We'll keep having children till...
Yep.
Are they on welfare, these people? They can't be.
No, I don't think my cousin is, but the other one was the childcare one. That's why she ended up dropping out of the whole bit.
Unbelievable. Thank you for your call, Tyler.
Yep, no worries. Cheers.
But I've got to ask you this question before you go. You've got the Commonwealth Games next month.
Yep.
There's a story that we have been talking about this morning about the homeless people being moved from the Gold Coast to south of the border. Have you noticed anything?
No, I haven't noticed too much. I work the night shift. I sleep during the day, so, yeah.
How are you preparing for the Commonwealth Games? There was also talk about people on Facebook advertising their driveways for people to park in.
At work, we're going to be pretty flat out. They've got road closures and road changes and so forth, so it's mucking up their deliveries. And on our side of things, we're doubling down on the roster, but we've got graduating roster. We're going to jump in the deep end first and see what happens and try and adjust and cope. But, it's management decision, so we'll have to see how it all goes.
All right. Thanks for your call, Tyler.
No worries. Cheers.
Okay, mate. Bye-bye. Okay, 133353. That is the telephone number. This is The Night Shift around Australia and around the world on the Triple M Network.